last time on Serial. This is the Punk News Podcast, episode 281. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, on the year-end show, on the recap show, on the music-heavy show, on the show that has an incredibly sad thing that we have to talk about before we get to all the fun, I have three of my very special friends, Mr. John Gentile in Philadelphia, PA.
What is life but a dream?
I don't know.
I think it's a rhetorical question. I don't think there's an answer.
Oh. Well, it makes for poor conversation, you know.
Well, don't tell that to Shakespeare.
Well, I mean, but like our whole job is to. Also, Mr. Tom Trauma in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
How's it going, guys?
Very well. And finally, Mr. Ricky Frankel in the City of Angels.
What's up?
So, yeah, see there, I remembered where everybody was from. So, geography lesson 3 out of 3 for me. Before we get to the show, before we get to anything that we about this year, about 2015, about the stuff that was cool, the stuff that was maybe not so cool, we got to pay tribute to one of the greats. If you lived under a rock, then you probably still knew. Lemmy from Motorhead passed this past week. John, You want to give a little bit of an obit here, and then we'll chat a bit about Lemmy.
Well, Lemmy Kilmister, Lemmy Kilmister, without question, is one of the most legendary musicians ever. Early on in his career, he played in a group called the Rockin' Vickers, which was kind of a group influenced by the Beatles. We played a Rockin' Vickers tune on the podcast about a year and a half ago. After that, he was in kind of a psychedelic group called Sam Gopal, where Sam Gopal was actually a guy that played the sitar, and Lemmy actually wrote all the songs. He also briefly roadied for Motorhead. After that, he joined an incredibly influential and incredibly far out, incredibly groundbreaking tune band called Hawkwind, which you could say they're the first heavy metal band or one of the first heavy metal bands. You could say they're one of the first they are the first space rock band. And he was the bassist in Hawkwind for about 4 albums. They put out some really far out albums. He was kicked out of the band for, as Lemmy puts it, doing the wrong drugs. I mean, the last song he wrote for Hawkwind was a song called Motorhead. So he took the song Motorhead and formed a new band with 2 of the guys from the Pink Fairies, Larry Wallace being one of them. The first Motorhead album was recorded with the 2 guys from the Pink Fairies, and that kind of broke up. And then, of course, Lemmy formed the, I guess, classic formation of the Motorhead trio. And then, of course, as we know, he recorded many, many, many wild songs, many, many incredible, great, groundbreaking, just some of the most rocking tunes you've ever heard. Ace of Spades, Killed by Death, Dancing on Your Grave, Love Me Like a Reptile, Orgasmatron, Doctor Rock, Stone Deaf, just an incredible legacy. Motorhead toured nonstop. I got to say, I didn't know Lemmy personally, although he did do an interview for Punk News once. I interviewed him. And the same week that Punk News interviewed Lemmy, so did Rolling Stone and so did Entertainment Weekly. And I think that speaks volumes about Lemmy in that even though, you know, he got interviewed by some very big publications. He gave Punk News their 15 minutes, and he did it with the interview wasn't like the kind where we both break down crying at the end and hug each other, but it was a great, straightforward, interesting interview. And so what can you say about a guy that rocks out, is a legend, gets respect, but is cool to people like Punk News and other bands that maybe aren't at his level of fame or influence or whatsoever? His final days came as maybe not so much of a shock. He was having severe health problems for the past 2 years. He had some kind of infection in his skin from drinking, basically a version of gout in his skin, which was a problem about 2 years ago. Then about 6 or 7 months ago, he had to end some concerts early because he wasn't feeling well. He actually did a show about 2 weeks ago, which is his final show, played all the way through. And then on the 26th, for some reason, he went to the doctor because he wasn't feeling well, and it turned out that he had severe cancer in his brain, in his back, in his spine. And so the doctor basically came over to his house the same day and said, you've got 2 to 6 months. There's really nothing we can do whatsoever. Apparently, Lemmy just said, well, 2 months, that's it. But he wasn't, like, broken up. He wasn't crying. And there's a pretty interesting article in Rolling Stone that talks about his last few days. He basically went to his favorite bar down on the strip, played a video game, and then kind of just passed away peacefully while nodding off, taking a snooze. I think a lot of people have a lot of different feelings about this, but what can I say? He's a guy that rocked out, lived like he said he was going to live, did what he did, didn't bullshit, and basically lived like a true rock and roller. And basically, I think, was aware of the deal that he was making by the way that he was living, and was happy, or at least understanding of the wages of that deal, if you will. I know Tom Trauma is a huge fan. Tom Trauma, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, it's just, you know, the guy truly is amazing. He played his last show 17 days before he died. And I remember reading like a year ago that he quit drinking Jack and Coke for health purposes, and he switched to vodka and orange juice. This is an amazing guy. I was lucky to see him several times over the – I started seeing him in the early 90s and probably saw him as recently as 2 or 3 years ago. Always a great show. You know, he truly was the consummate showman. You know, the rock and roll lifestyle, quite frankly, to live the way he lived for 70 years is nothing short of miraculous. So I'm not going to – you know, a lot of people are acting like they're really broken up about this. But, you know, I just think it does him a disservice. It's just, you know, listen to him loud. Listen to him loud so your neighbors can hear it. And that's good enough. 22-album legacy, you know, it's just awesome. He's awesome.
I agree. I mean, the guy lived for 70 years. About 60 of those years, he lived like a complete maniac. And I think he was aware of the dangerous lifestyle he was living and preferred to live a dangerous lifestyle. He put out some great music and rocked till nearly his very last day. What can you say, you know?
Yeah.
Well, with that said, you know, there's no way we can properly pay tribute to Lemmy. And just, you know, you just look at the outpouring where it just like seemed like it just like took over the internet the day that it came out. There's so much that's been written in the past few days. There's so much that's probably been recorded and everything else. So by all means, there's an indulgence of cool tributes that are out there on the Rolling Stone one you mentioned that, you know, are better than we're going to do. So, you know,
it's very rare that you find a guy who is so beloved in both the metal and the punk community. I think, I don't know that there is anyone else like that, honestly. I mean, there's a few of the quote-unquote crossover bands who have mass appeal, but as far as just generally loved in both those scenes, you don't get that very often.
I think part of it is because he was a cool guy. Like, I think Lemmy really was a cool guy, you know? Like, I think he didn't bullshit you. I think he didn't act like he was your best friend, but he was polite and considerate and treated everyone as a person.
Well said, John.
All right, so with that said, we're going to move into our recap of 2015. We're going to talk a little bit about what happened this past year, mainly with song. We're going to talk about some of the records that the four of us latched onto and what we personally liked. And we're going to do this little radio show style. At least I think that's going to work. So we're going to play a whole bunch of music on this episode. In between the music, we're going to have some discussions about what went on this year as far as punknews.org, as far as, you know, music in general, where we're going to go in the year to come, all that jazz. So, first off, Tom, you want to take this one and talk about a few things that you liked here. Play some music.
Sure. First, overall, I thought 2015 was not a particularly great year for music. In that last year, I know when I went to winnow it down to 20 bands, I had at least 10 that I thought were worthy of making it into some kind of a top 20 list. This year, I pretty much everybody I gave 3.5 stars to pretty much made my top 20 this year. There just wasn't an abundance of stuff, and I'm sure there's some really good stuff out there I didn't hear. But so my list is kind of a lot of it is not far from me geographically, just because that's what I had a lot of access to. So I had a lot of and as number one, I had a band from Detroit called Break Anchor, who is probably the best known band on my list. Jane of Var from the Suicide Machines. Great record. Anybody who hasn't heard it should check it out. And I also, of course, Nightbirds, like everybody else. But there was a couple other bands from Michigan that are certainly worth mentioning. Against the Grain from Detroit also. A Celt punk band from Saginaw called the Toss Pints. That's really great. Bad Assets from Detroit. And my favorite classic punk album of the year was Poison Idea's new record. And my favorite comeback album was Faith No More, which was fantastic. So what I'm going to play for you right now is, first I'm going to play Break Anchor, and I'm going to play what is essentially kind of their signature song. It was on an early single. It might have been the first song they ever wrote, but they re-recorded it for their new album, which is called In a Van Down by the River, and that song is called Black Hearts and Blackouts. And then I'm going to play a song from Poison Idea from their new album, which is called Confuse and Conquer, and that song is called Beautiful Disaster. So you just heard Break Anchor and Poison Idea, and then after that, the last song was a band called Snafu. They're also from Detroit. That song was called Eternal Nocturnal, and it came from their album Present Day Plague, and it all kind of tied together because Jay Navarro from Break Anchor, Suicide Machines, and Hellmouth sang, added some vocals to that song. There's definitely a couple of albums that I'm really looking forward to in the next year that will be coming out of the Detroit area. And one is the new Hellmouth album. For those of you who don't know, Hellmouth is Jay's like super heavy, hardcore, almost gets into some crazy metal territory. So I'm looking forward to that. Rebel Spies, also from Detroit. They're more of a traditional style punk rock band, hardcore band. I'm looking forward to that. And Childbite, also from Detroit, who play like super weird, freaked out, post-punk, hardcore with a little bit of metal on it. Also, there's some of my old favorites, a lot of thrash and crossover stuff. We're going to get a new Anthrax album in February, which I'm really looking forward to because their last album was really quite good. And Corrosion of Conformity, now that Pepper's back in the fold, is going to be making new music, so I'm looking forward to that. And I guess I'm going to have to wait one more year till 2016 to hear some new DRI music, which I know is on the horizon. I'm also really looking forward to that. So that's my 2015 and 2016 in a nutshell, I guess.
Great, cool. Thanks, Tom. John,
Adam,
let's chat a little bit about this past year. List ranking aside, is there anything that popped up that you really liked, you really didn't like, you want to bring some attention to, or?
Well, I agree with Tom where he said 2015 was a little weak, I think the year. I mean, there certainly were amazing records that came out over the year, and I know it's kind of heretical to say, well, this year was weaker than others. People will say, you know, if you think the year was weak, you weren't listening hard enough. But I kept my ears pretty close to the ground, and I wasn't quite blown away by 2015 as I was 2014. I think maybe because there were fewer legends returning to like do what they do best, and it was kind of a lull year, I think, both for a lot of new bands and older bands. That being said, there was some absolutely fantastic music to come out this year. I think some of the more notable releases that came out would be like, well, The Garden, which I'm always talking about, which I think their new record was really interesting because their previous record was just bass and drums and then doing kind of a wire thing. And I think they did a really good job of incorporating like electronics or synth punk into their new sounds. And I think they've really fashioned a new weird sound. Couple of new bands that I'm really excited about are bands that I just stumbled upon. There's this band called Posers. I played one of their songs on the podcast before. Really good. They're out of Philadelphia. Really good kind of classic UK 77 punk, but it doesn't sound retro. It sounds very, very new to me, and I think maybe because it's informed by the core tenets of songwriting like the early punkers were, and it's not necessarily trying to mimic early punk rock. Excellent band. There's another band. I think they're out of California, maybe they're out of Las Vegas, this band called Danger Friends, which they're on Kung Fu Records. They're this synth, another synth punk band, and they're just really different and really aggressive. A lot of times different or weird bands maybe aren't aggressive, but this Danger, or if they are aggressive, there's really no rhythm to it and it just sounds like noise. Danger Friends is a very aggressive, very combustive, very volatile, but there's an inherent rhythm and I guess beat to it, which I really like. So I think they're a really interesting band that I'm excited for. And so I think next year is going to have a lot of exciting new bands. And other than that, you know, Bad Canoes put out a new record, which I really, really loved. I hope Bad Canoes keeps putting out stuff. I don't know if they will or they won't, but we'll see. I mean, Adam, was there anything that really caught you off guard or surprised you this year?
I feel that like with so many of my lists in the past few years is that I'm grabbing a few bands that I like in a scene, and then I'm going deep on their labels or their communities or the bands that they're playing with, and mine absolutely turned out that way. I mean, there's a few of the really like really obvious ones that I feel that, you know, maybe don't like that I ranked super highly, but maybe. Like, of course I was going to rank them super highly. Like, you know, like the Sleater-Kinney record that came out, you know, it was great, but of course it was great. But really, like, as far as bands this year that I was not expecting to come in and to latch onto them as much as I did, John, one of your frequent recommendations is Screaming Females. That I adore Rose Mountain. It was one of my favorite records of the year. I listened to that thing. I feel like I listen to it more than anything else. It's not my number one, but if I'm going to sit down and just like, you know, I'm going to put on something, I'm probably going to put on Rose Mountain.
Wishing
Well is an incredible song. But yeah, that whole thing is just, oh, that whole record is so good. It's so good in just like if I had to describe to like space aliens what rock and roll was, and just come up with this like really pure idealized version of what modern rock and roll is. Like, I can't think of a better band to use as that. I mean, they're not particularly punk. So maybe from our standpoint, that doesn't quite work, but like, man, I like this. Like, I love that record. That record is so good. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that like, again, that I'm looking at that like, of course it was really good. Like the Nightbirds record was amazing, but of course it was amazing. The Radioactivity record was amazing, but of course it was. Like, these are bands with track records where they're gonna keep doing amazing stuff. I'm actually surprised that come the end of the year how much I really liked the Young Gov record.
Oh yeah.
Ben Cook from No Warning and Fucked Up. He released No Warning and Fucked Up, I guess, as most people know him, but he was also had a really cool little pop punk band, power pop band for a while called The Marvelous Starlings that I really liked. But he released a record this year called Ripe for Love that was, how would you explain it, John? It's like really sparkly AM radio ready pop music. Like
it's such an ambiguous, weird record. My ears heard it entirely differently. my ears heard it as sort of kind of like a Nile Rodgers chic, softer 70s funk album, or no, actually early 80s funk album, kind of like Chic or kind of like the Johnson Brothers or you know, a lot of that kind of lighter early 80s funk.
Yeah, like that's probably a better description than mine. It's like it's such a weird little record, especially it's weird if you consider him being like the vocalist of like a big tough guy hardcore band like No Warning or a member of Fucked Up. It makes a little bit more sense if you think about like Ben Cook as being a guy that, like, you know, he makes his money by writing songs for like big pop stars. Like Ben Cook's had songs on Taylor Swift records that he's written, right? Like, so it's like those like super, super honed pop songwriting skills that I guess are coming through with it. But it's such a weird record, but man, it stuck with me way more than I thought. So that one for sure.
He's a weird guy. I mean, I like Ben Cook a lot, but he's a tough guy to put your finger on. Like, it's tough to get his angle or what he's thinking. Don't you agree?
Yeah. And it's funny because like some of the Fucked Up guys, like I feel like I know what they want. Like I know what they're in it for. Like Pink Eyes Damian, like he's an open book with what he loves, and it's adorable the kind of music that he loves and that he promotes, and you know, the stuff that he's doing on his own podcast. And but I feel that like there's not a huge enigma to what he is. But like, yeah, but Ben is one of those guys where I'm like, I couldn't tell you the first thing that's going on with him. So what about you, Ricky?
Oh man, I mean, for me, 2015 was weird, and I said this in my gigantic novel of an intro for my list. I thought the first like half of 2015 was slow for new records. Like the new ones I was really looking forward to were kind of far and in between. I think like the Red City Radio album came out around that time. I totally missed the. I totally was late on the what's it called? Toy Guitar album 2, which are both on my list, but I got that late. And then once like after the Bad Cop album came out, things started moving along more for me, at least, and I think that came out around the summer. I mean, I was so happy. I mean, I wasn't even assuming that there was going to be a new Leftover Crack album, which I thought was amazing. It was my number one. Kind of assumed that Nightbirds again, which I think will be like the statistical out of all of our like the staff list. I think that'll make it to number one. I know it's not everyone's number one favorite, but right now it seems to be, at least with the lists that are currently out now, it's always in the top three.
Yeah.
Do you guys with that record, you guys notice that no one put it at number? See, I think all of us didn't put it at number one because we thought it would win the main bracket, so we put other ones at the number one. Do you think it would lose the number one spot because none of us actually put it at the number one bracket?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is,
it had a lot of like twos and threes. I assume those still weigh heavily when they're
putting all this stuff
in the computer.
I hope it wins, honestly.
The computer being me. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Leftover Crack, I know, is my number one. I know for sure that will not make the number one spot.
It's going to rank pretty high, dude. Leftover Crack is on a lot of lists.
It's on mine, yours, and someone else's, isn't it? For now. I mean, for right now.
But only half of them have been published as of recording.
Yeah. So. I totally missed the boat on Leftover Crack. Like, I've never listened to Leftover Crack. Like, been saying I need to buy Fuck World Trade just because I've heard so much about it. But
you gotta start with them. You gotta start with Choking.
Go in order, dude.
It's from my lost decade. I just don't know that their music.
Your lost decade. You and John Lennon.
Adam might be able to relate to this when he gets in a few years, but when my kids were really little, I had a real hard time keeping track of what was new. Like, I still follow my big favorite bands, but like between 2000 and 2010, I'm pretty weak. Like, I'm super good on the 80s, but I'm a little weak. Well, Leftover Crack came out.
Well, Mediocre Generica came out in 2001, Fuck World Trade came out in 2004. So that, yeah.
I was, you know, buying houses and changing diapers and stuff like that. So,
they've got to be a weird band to try to go into, just because, like, I remember, like, when Mediocre Generica came out, they still had a huge amount of goodwill that had been built up because of Choking Victim and because of like whatever they put out before that. So the fact that that Mediocre Generica was sort of like fucking bizarre and all over the place and like really ultra heavy at times and everything like that didn't weird anyone out, because they were like, oh, okay, like they're doing this now, but we know them as being this like bouncy ska punk band. So, okay. Right. Yeah. It's weird to try to approach them, but not be on that like time journey with them. Yeah. So,
yeah. Well, they're one of those bands that I feel a little guilty that I didn't listen to. The other one for me that I actually know that I would have liked by based on the couple songs I heard that I just didn't get a chance to listen to was the War on Women album. And I regret that I wasn't. Good. And it's not that I just, you know how it is. You can only listen to so many records. And, you know, Ricky, I'm sure you relate to this. Half the time you're listening to music to review it.
Yeah.
So you're, it's just the amount of just listening to music for pleasure, if you will, is not what it could be. Yeah.
Just real quick. And then two surprises for me that happened this year was, I never considered myself a Teenage Bottle Rocket like fan. I loved their live shows, but I never really listened to them. This album, Tales from Wyoming, I thought was their best work. And actually now I consider myself a fan of the band. And then also another surprise was Nightbirds, I don't even think 2 months ago posted, a status about this band called Violent Reaction. The album's called March On. It's fantastic. It was so good. And
One I want to check out, Ricky. I want to check it out, man.
You know, and I don't follow like straight edge that much, but these guys fucking rip. And they were on one of the guest lists this year. Or maybe it was actually Brian from Nightbirds. I think it was on his, but damn, that is a really fucking awesome record. And then of course, Direct Hit and The Success, were the two from Red Scare that I really enjoyed this year.
So one of the things that we wanted to talk about here was there anything that was a disappointment? And I have a hard time with this because when we first started doing lists on Punk News, that was one of the sections that was in everyone's list where everyone listed their, you know, oh, these are the things I'm looking forward to in the next year. And this is what I like this year. And these were the disappointments, but I stopped doing that years ago. And it's only because I feel that if something immediately isn't grabbing me or something I don't find interesting enough to try to figure out why I don't like it immediately, I'm not listening to it to the point where I'm disappointed. Like there's too much stuff that I have to just like, you know, look out the window, look at that record as I'm passing it, and then drive away and not think about it anymore. So I don't know if I have any in particular for this, but do you guys, like, was there anything you were really looking forward to that just fucking bummed you out?
You know, there were two that I can think of right now. I mean, I wasn't bummed out because I wasn't like a gigantic fan of either of these bands to begin with, but like the Refused album just for me did not work. And I wasn't disappointed, but I felt like I just felt like when they released the single for this album that I was expecting something completely different. So I didn't put it on my list, even though I ended up seeing them anyway. Which was the Public Limited album. I love a few songs on that album, but overall, I couldn't sit through the whole thing. I pick and chose a few. That's why I put that that EP of theirs on there, because all my favorite songs from that album were actually on that 10-inch. So, but other than that, but like again, I wasn't disappointed with that one.
Refused is a really good one, and this is exactly what I'm talking about. Is that like I'd forgotten that record had come out at all, which is super weird to me because Refused has been so.
I mean, there was so much built hype up around that album.
Loved it, but I mean, like I feel that like back during the early 2000s, kind of like mall emo era, where that record became the album that, you know, all these shitty bands used as the foundation for their sound, that when they finally got back together and finally released something, that there would be more, I guess, just more general excitement. But like, man, that thing just landed with a thud. It feels like,
I remember like there was so much hype around it. And then when they came here to play a show, you know, that's sold out. I mean, everyone was talking about how awesome this album is, and now you haven't heard about it for like 5 months or whenever.
Well, I mean, did you even get that impression? Like, did you get the impression that people thought the record was awesome? Because
I think everyone was just really excited about it.
They were, but it flopped. I mean, few records flop like that one flopped. Like, it was so much build up. It came out, people stopped talking like about it like 3 days after it came out. It was a flop
for sure.
So, I wonder what. So John, any disappointments here?
Yeah, there was two. I don't want to call them out because they're not huge bands, and I don't know. I think if it's a huge band that flops, that's fair game. If you're a band, you know, making a lot of money off your band, then you can take the criticism. But if you're a band that's barely getting by or not even getting by on your music, kind of poor sport to say, oh, this really let me down. There were two records that really did let me down. I'm not going to name them, but if you really want to figure it out, you can look at my lists and kind of get a good idea of what I thought flopped this year. So,
I'm looking at the Refused review. It's a staff review, and whoever, I'm not going to say who the name of the reviewer was, but it got a 3 stars.
Well, who wrote it?
Well, it was Mitchell T.
Oh, Mitch. Yeah, Mitch is a good reviewer. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah. So
that's probably about right, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So, John, tell us about some stuff you did like now. Play us some music here.
Let me tell you, people, everyone knows I love the Melvins. I saw the Melvins this year. And for the encore, it was – well, first of all, the Melvins have been pounding around with a band called Les Butcherettes. Do you guys know Les Butcherettes?
I do not.
No.
I saw them on tour together this year also.
Yeah, yeah. Tom, how was that show? How was that show?
It was histrionic. I think was the word I would use to describe it. She was sort of, it was two women and a dude, and the one woman sort of threw herself around on the floor. She may or may not have been rolling around her own menstrual blood a la Gigi Allen.
It was awesome. That's Terry Jenner.
I don't know. They're all right.
I think the band's fantastic. The Melvins have been touring around with this band called Les Butcherettes. Les Butcherettes is basically Terry Genderbender. She goes by Teresa Suarez now. And I've interviewed her 3 times. She's really, really cool, but she's weird. She's good weird. She's got a very interesting background. She was born in Colorado but grew up in Mexico after her father died. And she's Mexican, but she's light-skinned. So in America – people like kind of shunned her because she was Mexican, but in Mexico they kind of shunned her because they thought she was white or too gringo, is what they called her, even though she's Mexican. And so, but she's extremely artistic and very weird. She's kind of like, like a female. I want to say like a female Alice Cooper in Alice Cooper's heyday, and she's really cool. Les Butcherettes put out a great album this year. So anyways, Les Butcherettes opened for Melvins. And at the end of the Melvins set, Terry comes out. And with the Melvins, they cover Bikini Kill's Rebel Girl. And it was one of the best encores I've ever seen. It was faster than the original version, berserk, crazy. Terry's rolling around on the ground screaming. And the Melvins are just so heavy and so fast. It was like a sledgehammer. Bam, 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 bam. Well, they recorded a live in studio version. I'm going to play that. It's on Joyful Noise Recordings, and it's one of the coolest covers I've ever heard. The first track I'm going to do is Melvins with Teresa Suarez, Terry Genderbender of Les Butcherettes doing Bikini Kill's Rebel Girl, and it's an amazing single. And then after that, we talked about it earlier. I'm just going to play Screaming Females' Wishing Well. This is Screaming Females were not my number one record of the year, but I love the record. However, Wishing Well might be my number one single of the year. This song, it doesn't sound like a Motown song. It doesn't sound like a reggae song. But the way those songs, for whatever reason, for their tempo, for their texture, for their sound, for the lyrical content, for whatever, songs like that kind of move your soul. They make you feel spiritually connected to either the songwriter or something about yourself that you've had in your own life. I don't know how else to describe it. Have you guys ever experienced that? Like when you're really listening to a song and it really hits you, you feel a sort of connection or a enlivenment of yourself that you usually don't hear when listening to music. Do you guys ever feel that?
Oh, for sure.
So this is how this song hit me. So first track, Melvins and Terry Genderbender doing Rebel Girl, just blowing the house down. After that, Screaming Females doing Wishing Well, moving your soul. We'll be right back.
ocean. You can swim the sea. You can jump into the fire, but you'll never be free. You can shake me up, or I can break you down.
And we are back. And the last track I threw in there, what we just played, was Alice Cooper and his friends covering Harry Nilsson, and the song One, Jump in the Fire, and Lime in the Coconut together. This record was so under the radar, nobody knew about it. Alice Cooper put together a band called the Hollywood Vampires. In the mid-70s, there was a drinking club called the Hollywood Vampires out in Hollywood. It was like Alice Cooper, Keith Moon, Ringo Starr, I think John Lennon sometimes, Harry Nilsson, and they would all get together and drink. And so Alice Cooper put together this band called the Hollywood Vampires, which is him, Joe Perry, and some other people. And he recorded a whole bunch of covers. One of the covers was a cover of Nilsson's One, Jump in the Fire. Cover records usually aren't that great. This Alice Cooper record, it's called Hollywood Vampires, is probably the third best covered record I've ever heard. Definitely third or fourth best cover record I've ever heard. If you like Alice Cooper, if you like 70s rock, you will love this record. It's also got a great cover with Paul McCartney. It's got an awesome version of School's Out that morphs into Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall Part 2. It's got a cool cover of A Whole Lot of Love by Led Zeppelin. It's a great record. And, of course, before that, we had Screaming Females doing Wishing Well, and before that, Melvins and Terry Genderbender doing Rebel Girl. Listen, guys. Punk News, I think in 2015, Punk News did a lot of interesting stuff that we hadn't done before. I think we really took some daring choices, some daring strategies. And I'm really proud of a lot of things that we did in 2015. One of the things, I mean, I've talked about it a million, this will probably be the last time I talk about it, but the Punk News mixtape, I'm so proud that we were able to put that together. It's kind of the culmination of my 10 years as a music journalist. And I had this vision, and it came out pretty much exactly like I wanted it to come out. 42 bands, mixed like a hip-hop mixtape, tons of shout-outs. I mean, we had the Dwarves, KRS-One, Lee Scratch Perry, Jello Biafra, the Meat Men, Mischief Brew, Jesse Michaels, all on the same mixtape. I mean, that's pretty insane if you ask me. So I was pretty proud that we did that. I think it's cool. We started doing a lot more original content. We started doing Sonic Reducers, which are where kind of like a playlist where people talk about either why those songs are important or why those songs are important to people. And we also started Collector's Corner, which is basically people just interviewing people about their record collection, which you would think would be boring, but those are some of our most popular articles. People love – I guess fellow record collectors love reading about what fellow record collectors like doing. So, I mean, what did you guys think we did really well this year? What did you think was interesting that we did this year? And what do you think that we did poorly or maybe could do better next year? Adam White, what do you think?
Oh, I have so many thoughts on this. So exactly what you said. So from a personal standpoint, I'm so proud of the mixtape.
It's
so
cool,
The mixtape was so fun. I'm sitting on a shelf next to me here, and this, like, the fact that it exists and is like a professional item that was created and isn't just some goofy shit that we, you know, slapped on a website, but is a thing that you can hold, is pretty amazing to me. I'd love to do more stuff like that. That was super fun. I love that. That was just, I mean, you use the term all the time, but like, it was whimsical for the sake of being whimsical. Like, there was no purpose to it. Like, it wasn't meant to make money. It wasn't meant to be, you know, we weren't trying to start a label. There are people that are bitching us out because, like, why is this a tape? Why can't we go stream it? And it's because then it wouldn't be a tape if you could go stream it, dummies. Like, there is something about that. I feel very much speaks to, I guess, the reason why I do all of this stuff still, because, like, it's not my career to be talking about music on the internet. So, you know, it's entirely an interest-based thing for me. So that was, like, totally an interest-based project. So that was great. And there's a lot of, like, podcast-related stuff that I feel really good about, or that was really cool. I mean, we just did it, but we just did the Sandinista episode, which I thought was really fun. And I'd like to do more stuff like that. We've either guested or taken over over on the Everything in the Kitchen Sink podcast a few times, and that was really cool. We were just talking before the show about the guest appearance where we took over the whole show and just played like 3 hours of silly music, when that was great. And I mean, just as far as this podcast goes, it comes out on time now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you guys remember this time last year.
Oh yeah, we were like 6 weeks behind.
Yeah, we recorded like a Christmas episode and then released it in February. like
going to your iTunes would be like nothing, and a week later you come back to be like 10 episodes.
It was fucking all over the place, and that was our own fault. But we got out of it, and we've remained on the straight and narrow sense, and I'm really happy about. So, you know, that's really cool. I mean, as far as punk news itself, I have been for like 3 years really disappointed in myself. what I mean by this is just that, like, I refuse to acknowledge that there are limited hours in the day. So, you know, I have now two kids, and I'm part of a team that runs a business and everything like that. And all of those things should, you know, preclude me from doing what I'm doing, or at least, like, a reasonable person should just responsibly say, like, I don't have time to do this punk news thing right now because of all this real life shit that I have to do. So I am going to, like, gracefully show myself the door. And, like, that's what Rich Verducci, who used to be one of the hosts of this show, did. Yeah, he had, you know, his daughter was born, and he was like, all right, like, I have big boy concerns. I have to get out. And I totally respect that. And I cannot make myself do that, if only because I've been doing this for, like, it's got to be close to 15 years at this point. And it's, I don't know not doing it. So the thought of not doing it sort of terrifies me. So I just stick around, but I stick around and I'm pretty useless on a day-to-day basis. And every year I'm like, I have to become more useful. I never managed to make it happen. And I'm trying. So that's one of those things where just like, you know, I wish I could get my contributions up, because I think that really one of the problems that we see is, and this problem manifests itself as people giving John shit, is we have like lots of people that are like quote unquote on the Punk News staff, but as far as like the nitty gritty of actually making news happen every day, I think this past month has been pretty good, but like up until this like latest round of onboarding that we did with people, you know, it was like if John didn't post anything in a day, nothing would be posted, which is super unfair for a bunch of reasons, because, you know, that means that, you know, it's on John to actually like keep the lifeblood of the thing going. But then at the same point, John gets shit because John's talking about things that interest John. So, you know, like how do you solve that? And there's some of our detractors that John, I guess, would say that like I should kill you. And I, like that would be a solution to the we hear from John too much problem, but then would totally fuck the whole Punk News has content problem. So that wouldn't work. The actual answer to that thing is to like, you know, get more people regularly contributing, and then John's, you know, particular voice or tastes or whatever won't seem to dominate as much as people seem to think that they do. So that's something we totally have to get better at. So, but yeah, and I guess this bears mentioning, although it feels sort of inconsequential at this point, just because I've been looking at it for so long, but we did relaunch Punk News this year. So we're totally not out of the woods as far as getting everything where we want it to be. But under the hood, the gears are in place for us to be able to, you know, maintain the site for, you know, the years to come without crashing into the side of a mountain. So there's that. So, yeah, you know, Punk News, 15 years in, still a work in progress. That's my answer.
Well, that the Lemmy thing, because it shows the comments are coming back. I feel like it takes people to get pissed off anytime you do a new format. But if the story is right, they'll still come back. I think we're seeing that more lately.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. The new site was hard for me to begin with. I really liked the old site, just the way it looked. I realized the old site looked dated. But now that I've gotten used to the new site, I really, really like the new site. I think it's a nice looking site. I think it's great for features. I think it just took a little time to get used to. And then once you get used to it, you do realize the benefits of the new site, which I like a lot. I like it a lot now. I think people should just give it a chance. And I think people have. I think people are coming around to it, to tell you the truth.
It's a lot more mobile friendly. That's for certain.
Yes.
And I do like the kind of rolling reviews through the – like when you go three stories down, the kind of – rolling reviews through the middle. I dig that.
That is cool, yeah.
Also, I mean, something that I like about the new format is, you know, you can actually get a notification when someone actually responds to a comment.
That is nice, yeah.
That's nice. And then also you can up and downvote people's comments.
Yeah, what's up with that? Which,
I'm cool with it.
I am too, and you're right, because it'd be in years past, you know, you'd be like, well, I'm sort of sparring with someone, I had to go back and look at it every few hours to see if there's any new action on our sparring front. But yeah, now you get an email, luckily. So yeah, I dig that too.
In terms of this year I became an editor. That's kind of, for me, that was pretty crazy. But I think what, and also John, I do want to do a Sonic Reducer if we can.
Let me interrupt you. First of all, Ricky, by all means, all the listeners, if you want to contribute to Punk News, the door for contributions to Punk News is wider now than ever. All you got to do is send me an email, say, John, here's what I want to do. I'll let you know my thoughts. Chances are I'm not going to say no. So if you have something you want to do at Punk News, shoot me an email and we'll see what we can work out.
You know, not Sonic Reducer, I meant Collector's Corner.
Oh, you would be the subject of one.
If I, yeah, I mean, sure, yeah.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
I saw Sam Barrett did one, so I thought that. And didn't Adam do one? Adam E do one? I think he did. Anyway, and just, I mean, also, I mean, I'm still doing the reviews thing. I think I broke 130 this year. And then in terms of what I think, but everything else, I agree. I think on the content stuff, I think we've been doing, I think it's been great. What I think Punk News could do better is I kind of miss the Saturday photo feature thing. And if possible, if we could somehow do this, I was just thinking about this earlier is, I mean, the YouTube account is not being used at all. So I mean, if we could, I thought it would be cool if we could expand into that if we could. But those are just a couple thoughts.
I'm just thinking of all the horrible things that we could put onto a YouTube account, and none of them were like mature things that someone would actually consider. It was all just like various levels of really gross porn. All right, John. And by John, I mean me, because it's my turn to do this, and I'm not even looking at the fucking right pipe in my script. Hi, I'm Adam. Tom, when you were talking about your songs, there's one thing that you said that really struck me here, and it was that – and you said this almost apologetically, and I don't think you should. And that was that so much of the stuff on your list ended up being being local, being from your region, from the labels that are kind of in your area. And – I bought that kind of hook, line and sinker as the thing that I do now. I feel like I've hit a saturation point as far as just music goes, where I have no desire to try to figure out what the rest of the world is going on about sometimes. And I'm looking at my list right now, and I've got like, I feel like half my list is probably from Toronto, if not more. And it's only because, like, there's, you know, what I was saying earlier, like I hear one or two bands that I really like, and then I go check out the labels that they're on, and then I like a bunch of bands on their label, and then I like the bands that they're touring with, and then suddenly that has dominated my listening for the year.
And you end up, most of your records you buy for the year, you're buying at shows, and
I'm buying.
You know,
stuff
the after. Thing I will say in our defense, Adam, as opposed to, you know, Ricky's in L.A., I don't think you're going to do much better as a scene than L.A. And the fact of the matter is, Philadelphia is also San Francisco, yeah. But Philadelphia is also a musical hotbed. Now, granted, there's a lot of wimpy crap that I don't like comes from Philadelphia, but nevertheless, they have a good scene. And the fact of the matter is, Michigan and Ontario are probably a little underrepresented. So I feel like there's more, you know, I don't think we're being total dicks if we rep our scenes a little harder.
No, like I don't do the world any good by talking about, like, I don't know what, like Refused. Right, not to bag on them too much, but like
I'll bag on them, dude. I'm not even a fan of The Shape of Punk to Come. So
okay, I mean, so like, I mean, but even bands that like I'm a fan of, like or bands I have, you know, no particular problem with or anything like that. Like if I wrote a list that was just like talking about, like, you know, like Lagwagon and Strung Out or anything like that, that, you know, Southern California, New York, all these places, they have enough people that are talking about their shit that I don't feel that like whatever I bring to the table is that. So that said, here's a bunch of stuff from Toronto and Ontario. So I've been very much influenced this year by a really short documentary that came out on YouTube that I probably saw really early in the year, if not late last year, called Untold Noise, that was profiling the Toronto noise punk scene. And I watched this thing, and it's just distortion, and it felt to me watching this snippets, watching this little YouTube doc, it's 20 minutes long, full of snippets of bands that I had never seen before, playing songs that I couldn't even really comprehend what they were. It felt a lot like what getting into punk was like originally for me. Where I'm hearing bands playing things that I find at the time very abrasive, and I'm like, I don't get what this is, but I kind of want to figure it out. And that's how I felt with a lot of the stuff that's come out of the scene out of Toronto. So I'm gonna play you a couple bands from that scene. First of all, off of Buzz Records, who have just fucking floored me with the stuff that they've released this year. We're going to play a band called Hussy. Buzz put out the Dilly Dally record, which was my number one this year. They put out, you know, this record, of course, they put out by stuff by the Beverleys. They put out stuff by Grays. There was very little that Buzz put out that I wasn't totally into. So first we're going to play the song Sally by Hussy. Then also from that scene, from that area, playing those same kind of shows, we're going to play a band called Soup Cans. And the song I'm going to play is called Crimes One. It's from their record Soft Party that came out on Telephone Explosion Records earlier this year, which is a great name for a label. So this is going to be Hussy. If you're trying to Google them or anything like that, it's just HSY and then Soup Cans.
Kinder's Wonderland, waiting for the Steve Miller Band. Rode the bat about five times, take the money and run, yo, it blew my mind. Smoking weed in the shrubs, fuck security, they are schlubs. Man, I miss being dumb. Miss smoking BTs under a bridge at lunch. Man, shit ain't the same. Got fucking old, fucking lame. In a Honda Civic at 5 a.m. doing donuts at the golf course again. Can't believe Jerry can drive. I can't believe we are still alive. Fast Times at Huntsville High, hang out at Camp Park every night. Selling fake drugs to camp kids, tear up notebook paper, we told them it was acid. Man, I miss being dumb. Miss smoking a bubbler at lunch. Man, shit ain't the same. I'm fucking old, I'm fucking lame. High as balls in Jackson Square, in the food court I'm talking to air. Security, they don't bother us, this whole mall, man, it's super messed up. Go outside, stare at traffic lights, I watch them change almost all night. Go and get a Murph sub, too high to eat, it's wasted. Man, I miss being dumb. Miss smoking BTs at lunch. Man, shit ain't the same. Got fucking old, fucking lame. Took too long for the ass to kick in, too bad it happened at 7-Eleven. Think that clerk tried to steal my soul. Fuck the chocolate milk, Steve, let's roll. Made a mistake, I got too high. Take me to the hospital, think I'm gonna die. Steve says, fuck no, get your head right. I'll hogtie you, play Double Dragon all night. Man, I miss being dumb. Miss smoking BTs under a bridge at lunch. Man, shit ain't the same. Got fucking old, fucking lame. I'm fucking old, fucking lame. I'm fucking old and lame.
All right, we're back. That last song that you heard was a song called Old and Lame by B.A. Johnston from Hamilton, Ontario, from his record Shit Sucks, his 10th LP. B.A. is a bit of an institution as far as the Ontario underground music scene goes. There was an article in one of the Vice music things over the past year or two that called him Canada's Gigi Allen, which is totally not appropriate, I think. But he embodies this sort of just like weird loser shtick that he manifests as like a. Was it like a new wave influence singer songwriter, but then at the same point, like he's just singing about just like being a complete dirtbag most of the time, and he embodies all of these, person living in a rust belt town outside of Toronto that really doesn't like Toronto because Toronto thinks they're so much better than the rest of us. Thing that all of us that live in Ontario outside of Toronto, I think, have a little bit of in us. So the record he had come out this year, Shit Sucks. Was super fun. It was the record that was playing in my car at like 3 a.m. as me and my wife rushed to the hospital so we could deliver my son. So it's a little bit stuck in my head because of that. So that song was Old and Lame by B.A. Johnston. Before that, you heard Soup Cans. And then before that, Hussy. Two really cool Toronto noise punk bands off of the Telephone Explosion and Buzz Record labels, respectively. So let's look ahead a little bit. 2016. What's coming up? What's going on? What are you guys into? I've got mine. Mine are so easy. The band that I've been talking about on this podcast and elsewhere forever, the Dirty Nil. They're releasing their first full length on Dynalone in early 2016, mind you. So it's going to be, in my hands in a couple months. So that, of course, is the big sun on the horizon that's blocking out everything else that might be coming out. So there's that one, absolutely for sure, that I'm looking forward to. But what else? What are you guys looking for?
Adam, the Dirty Nil, you've made me listen to them so much now that they're coming to town here to Grand Rapids at the end of March, and I'm like, and they're like third band in to the bill, and I'm like, I think I'm gonna have to go see them. So
you have to go.
Anyway, it worked. I already kind of jumped the gun on this, and I already told you what I was looking forward to. Specifically, but I actually want to add one more, and that is a Grand Rapids band, the Lippies. We've played them before. And I think they're gonna really make a splash this year. So the Lippies LP comes out on Red Scare, and I think real early in the year. Last time I heard they were mixing. So anyway, I've already talked enough about the coming year. I'll give you guys a chance.
For me, I mean apparently Pears are in the studio working on something for their next fat release. That's like my most anticipated album of the year this now. Also, what will be really interesting to hear is Pup's new album. Where they're going to go is going to be very, very cool. But also, like that, their first album was so dynamic. I just don't know what direction they're going to go in. So I'm looking forward to that. Still waiting on the Dead to Me album, American Son of Gringo, I think it's called. The Falcon from Red Scare. I want to hear that. Direct Hit announced their new album, either they're finished or they definitely announced it though. Morning Glory, which have been fairly quiet since War Psalms, they have post War Psalms an EP coming out on their Basis label called Buyback Records. And then I know we ran articles about how NoFX, possibly the Descendants, Bad Religion, and Against Me are in the studios now too. So those are the four big ones that I've been waiting for. But really, for me, it's like Pears. I'm so stoked on that next album. And I'll be playing. And I mean, like their letters to Meemaw 7-inch was my favorite EP of the year. They're just killer. This band is just on fire, and it will not stop. So those are mine.
One of the things that's common for me at punk news is I love a band. I love, love, love a band, and everyone else hates them. Well, get ready, 2016. Gnarboots is working on material, and I think they're going to release something in 2016. If you don't know Gnarboots, you need to check out. I love Gnarboots. Gnarboots is this weird – you really can't describe them. They're just a weird punk band. Sometimes they're ska. Sometimes they're hardcore. Sometimes they're synth punk. Sometimes they're almost like this weird like – Flaming Lips kind of music. They're just so far out there. I'm really excited to see what they put out, because they didn't really put out much of anything in 2015. Kicker, which has Pete the Roadie doing UK 82 style punk rock, they've been working on stuff. I'm super excited for that. Danzig says he's almost got a whole new album in the can. Tom Trauma, I know we're both Danzig fans. That cover album was pretty good. I mean, the covers album was pretty good. Not mind-blowing, but fun, right, Tom?
It was. I actually think I enjoyed that more than the recent albums of original stuff, even though those really? Have been, I think they've been steadily improving over the last decade.
I love Death Red Sabbath.
I think that was probably the best post, you know, after the first four, best.
I agree. I loved it. I hope the new record's like Death Red Sabbath.
It was a little less cartoonish than a couple of them had been leading up to it. But anyway, this is a conversation for another time, John. This is a whole podcast unto itself.
Maybe we should do a dancing podcast.
Maybe we should.
Joel Tannenbaum's project, The Rentiers, has a whole bunch of stuff putting out. What's interesting about The Rentiers, you know, we had Joel Tannenbaum on the podcast a lot. His group or his project, The Rentiers, every song is different than the one before it. So what's really fun about that band is, what is he going to do next? The band really has no identity, which is a lot of fun. Crazy in the Brains are working on stuff that, you know, I'm always talking about Crazy in the Brains. Maybe I talk about them too much. Lacerre, which is Katie Goodman's project, they've got a whole album in the can that's coming out in March. It's heavily Smiths influenced, so I'm excited to hear that. Melvins, of course, next year Melvins are going to be putting out one or two full lengths. One of them is going to be called All Bases Loaded, which is them and all, like a whole bunch of different bassists recording songs. I think there's like seven bassists on it, which I'm excited. Oh, and also they're putting out an EP with Stephen McDonald of Off and Red Cross, which is going to be exciting. I'm really excited about Open City, which is Rachel Rubino of Bridge and Tunnel, Dan Yemen, Andy from Ceremony, and the drummer, oh, I forget his name. I can remember the name off the top of my head. The drummer from Ted Leo's band and also Hounds. I've seen them live three times, and if you like Paint It Black, you will love Open City. It's sort of like Paint It Black with Rachel Rubino on vocals, although maybe a little bit less spastic hardcore and more kind of pounding muscular hardcore. I'm excited about the archival Rolling Stones releases that they've been putting out. A company called Eagle Rock Entertainment has been putting out these wonderful, wonderful unreleased live Rolling Stones double CDs. They've put out about eight of them now, and I don't know why these were sitting in the vault for so long. Well, I think they've been sitting in the vault because the Rolling Stones never wanted to put out archival stuff. But now that the band is essentially done, I think they say, well, might as well put it out now. If you are a Rolling Stones fan, it is a wonderful time to get these archival releases. These live records are It's why the Rolling Stones are the best band in the world. I'm also excited for the Rudimentary Peni reissues, which have been dragging, but Southern Records has been doing a beautiful job on those. Rudimentary Peni, if you have not checked them out, one of the greatest bands ever. Gothic punk, death rock, anarcho punk, crazy, some of the greatest lyrics, some of the best songs you've ever heard. And I have no inside information. I have no information whatsoever. All I'm saying is it's been a while since Off has put out something. I'm saying new Off record in 2016.
That should be interesting if that happens. I mean, where are they going to go after Wasted Years?
Excellent question, because I think the first three records all sort of built around each other, and they're all right. A little different than each other, but they revolve around the central theme. So now that they've done three of those, what are they going to do next?
Exactly.
I hope it's not a hard rock angle, but I hope it's something – well, I mean, if they just put out Off number four, I would be happy. If they did something unexpected that was awesome, I would love it. So Off in 2016, that's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, Flag's playing in 2016. I don't know that there's going to be any Off, but we'll see, I guess.
Ah, however, Keith Morris has been adamant that even though Flag is playing, all the people in the band have other projects. And I think Keith Morris doesn't want to be relegated as just playing the old hits. And he always insists about talking about Off, the Chuck Dukowski Sextet, and the Descendants. So I think he's very focused on Off. And I think Flag, and I don't mean to put Flag down, I love Flag. And I think it's awesome what they're doing. But I think the band sees Flag as not as a full-time band, just as a festival band. So people that want to see them can see them. And I think that's the perfect thing for Flag. Of course, I saw them in the club twice. So.
Yeah.
Listen, one last question. Adam, what you talked about how you listened to B.A. Johnson while driving to the delivery room. When you and your wife are driving to the delivery room, like the hospital, like, are you, like, sitting there listening to music like you're driving to the grocery store? Or, like, you, like, not hear it at all, and you're like, gotta get to the hospital, gotta get to the – I'm curious that you noticed that there was music playing on your stereo at all while driving to the hospital.
I may have, knowing that I had to go to the hospital and that my wife would find the record funny, put it in the car because when you go to the hospital to have a kid, and this was more so with my second, because they closed the hospital that was close to where we live and built a big hospital like one city over. So what would have been like a 10-minute drive became like a 30-minute drive to get to the hospital. So because you time it, like you got to go. You say, okay, how long will it take us to get there? So we knew it was going to take us 30 minutes, like from getting in the car to getting, you know, out of the car to get there. So you've got a bag packed, you've got all your shit ready to go. Then when all of a sudden, you know, your wife is like, you know, hospital now, you're like, boom, you got all your shit, you're in the car. Well, as part of that prep, I may have put the B.A. Johnson CD that they sent me into the CD player in my car, which, by the way, has never been used otherwise.
When you're driving to the hospital, a 30-minute drive, are you and your wife just like relaxed and like bullshitting, or are you like freaking out? Like, what's the mindset like? Let's say you injure your leg, you're like, gotta get to the hospital, and that's all you're thinking about is getting to the hospital. Are you guys just like enjoying the ride? What are you guys doing?
Well, I mean, I assume she was in horrible pain, but
you were enjoying yourself.
I was, there's a certain amount of excitement because I had my route and I knew which way to go. And because this happened to be at like 3 a.m, there wasn't any other traffic that was on the road. So, you know, it was pretty ideal as far as like, you know,
you're point like, a we're making point record time. This yeah, is the yeah, fastest really, I ever made it to the hospital. Time.
We should have a baby every year.
Exactly.
So anyways, yeah, there. So there we go. Do we have any other looking forward that we need to do, or should we pass the mic over to Ricky? Or
well, I'm just going to say this. Listen, people, Punk News has got a lot of really cool stuff planned for 2016. I'm making this the year that we do cool stuff. I've got one thing in the works. I've got two things in the works. I've got three things in the works. I'm planning five really cool things. If three happen, I'll be thrilled. If five happen, I'll be blown away. If you like the whimsical, weird, wacky stuff of Punk News, stay tuned. Because, I want to make this the year where Punk News really separates itself from everybody else and does something special. And people say, wow, Punk News is doing things that other people aren't doing. No, I've got six things planned. Three in the chamber, three not in the chamber. So we'll see. But I want this to be the year where people say, wow, Punk News is doing cool stuff. Will we get the respect? Will we not get the respect? I don't know. But this is the year I'm putting in the juice, and we'll see what happens.
Cool. All right, Ricky.
All right. So one of the proudest moments of 2016, probably the proudest moment of that I had punk news wise this year, was when Pears got signed to Fat. For me, that was so vindicating because I had been pushing them for actually not even a year at that point. They got signed so quickly. It couldn't have happened to better guys and more talented musicians. Seriously, like I think I saw them four or five times this year. And Go to Prison, I think in due time will be considered a punk classic. But that being said, like I said earlier, I think 2015, the second half was a lot better than the first. And Pears unexpectedly, but for me at least, they put out their first new material on Fat other than that Fat Wreck comp. They did my favorite EP of the year, Letters to Meemaw. It's just a two-song EP. The B-side I'm going to play, it's called Anhedonia. To me, it's the best song of the year. I'll go out on a limb like that. So that'll be the first song that I play. Like I said earlier, Violent Reactions album, March On, is absolutely fantastic. And I found that because Nightbirds posted about it, and I just happened to click on it, and there it is at number 8 on my list. So the song I'm going to be playing by them is called Leave Me Out. So here's Anhedonia and Leave Me Out.
Yeah.
That third song was Bart Cards and Broken Hearts by Civil War Rust off their album Help Wanted. I'd been hearing about that band for quite a while, and then I heard they and for some reason never got around to them. Then I found out that they released an album only in November, I think, and that was really good. That first song was Anhedonia by Pairs, and then after that was Violent Reactions, Leave Me Out. So yeah, guys, I think we're... Are we done?
Oh, God, I hope we're done.
It's bedtime.
Are we done? Are we done the year?
We're done the year. Let's wrap the shop. Let's lock it down.
We can all go home. Don't let us out of this.
Late night at the office, guys.
Hovercraft needs to be turned off.
Last one out, shut off the lights.
Yeah.